Why does Jesus confront the Jewish authorities in the Gospel of John? Couldn't he be more gentle? Welcome to Pro. I'm Alden Thompson, your host, as we continue our discussions of John's Gospel. My conversation partners are again Paul Dibdahl, Chris Johansson, colleagues in the School of Theology, and I'd like to just start with that question. In the Gospel of John, if you are wide awake when you read it, Jesus is time and time again confronting in a very public way. Why in the world couldn't he be more gentle?
If you read through the Gospel of John and compare it with the Synoptics.
The Synoptics are Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Right.
Jesus is in conflict there with the scribes and the Pharisees. Here it's the Jews. And that goes all the way through this Gospel. I think some serious studies on John have pointed out that when he put together his Gospel, it's a fair guess that the Christian community he was writing to and for and out of was in conflict with the Jewish community. Christianity, as it developed, was not looked upon at first as a religion apart from Judaism. It was a messianic. It was a group of Jews who had believed they found the Messiah.
It was a Jewish breakaway.
Was a Jewish breakaway. Mm-hmm. And maybe a subgroup, mm-hmm. not even a breakaway. Mm-hmm. They continued to worship in the synagogues together. And we know that at a particular time, the Jews wanted to get rid of them from the synagogues because they were too disruptive. And so they put a curse into the synagogue liturgy. In order to force them out. We see a little bit of this behind Matthew.
Do we have a date for that curse? Do you have any idea where that might be?
Towards the end of the first century.
Towards the end of the first century.
Fairly early on.
But when Paul, in Acts, when Paul is going to synagogues, the God-fearers and the Jews were still mixing very well.
They were still mixing, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So that may be why in his selection of material we hear Jesus in confrontation. With the Jews. Mm-hmm. Once in a while, they'll say the Jewish leaders, but very often simply the Jews. I don't know if that's a helpful explanation.
Now, John, Paul, I want to ask you a question about here. When we were talking about this before, you mentioned that the author of the study guide found the confrontational element in John's Gospel encouraging.
Yes, yeah.
Now, that's surprising for me because I tend to wince. Now, I'm a very intense person and know I need to control my confrontational impulses. But it's intriguing that he would make that comment.
Yeah, he noted, as you just said, that as he read through John, you do not find, you know, gentle Jesus, meek and mild in quite the same way. Jesus is more confrontational, as we've been saying. For some people, that's disturbing. For him, it was a great comfort because he himself was not as a soft-spoken, phlegmatic, as he had always been led to believe Jesus was. So when he saw Jesus as a more, you know, a stronger sort of confrontational, tell it like it is, take on the authorities kind of person, that was comforting to him, encouraging for him. That was an aspect that he was really drawn to.
Now, here is a miracle. At the Pool of Bethesda, or Bethsaida, I think it has a variety of names in modern translations, but I think traditionally we called it the Pool of Bethesda. It starts out with a curious tradition there. Maybe we could just touch that quickly. These are people waiting to be healed. If they can get in when the water is stirred, the tradition was, the rumor was, that if you could be first into the water, then you would be healed. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not actually part of the biblical text. I think that's kind of a later tradition that works its way in, isn't it? And
the best manuscripts don't have that.
Yeah.
The oldest, earliest manuscripts don't have that.
Yeah. And most modern translations of the Bible just actually skip from verse 3 to verse 5 of this chapter, chapter 5. They don't even include chapter 4, which contains that tradition.
Now, it's interesting, though, that tradition would lurk there, that this was known, which would make sense as standpoint of a tradition. But if you look at it, if God really did use this method, it would be pretty ghastly because then the neediest people would never have a chance.
That's right.
Yeah. Because only the strongest and the bravest would get there first. Kind of a dog-eat-dog approach to healing.
Yeah.
So Jesus comes, and it's on the Sabbath day. Now, this man that he heals, he's been sick for 38 years. He could have come any day, any year. but Jesus chooses to come on the Sabbath. Now let's focus on that fact for a moment. Why would Jesus simply choose to confront the authorities on Sabbath keeping in this way?
Yeah. When you look at the Sabbath miracles, not only in John, but in the synoptics as well, there are certain patterns that show up, the miracles that Jesus does on Sabbath. He initiates. It's not the sick person begging to be healed, but Jesus seeks them out. He usually does it in a public setting. Here we have, it's out in the open. There are other cases where he would have someone stand up in the synagogue who isn't asking to be healed, but makes a public show of it. And it seems intended. And also the other thing is, in all cases, it's not a life-threatening disease. It's something that could wait until the next day. As you just mentioned, 38 years, he could wait one more day. But Jesus is apparently intending to provoke controversy about the Sabbath.
I just did a little bit of math here. 38 years times 52, this man had gone through 1,976 Sabbaths.
Oh, my.
Almost 2,000.
Yes.
And finally Jesus comes.
And it's even though it says the Jews in Matthew, it's probably the authorities that are really aroused by this.
Yeah.
I'd like to take us back to look at the very beginning of the book.
Okay.
At the end of the prologue, you have this interesting statement, verse 17: "For the law was given through Moses; grace and truth came through Jesus Christ." It's not that the law is being put down. I think it's the way the law has been applied.
Now, let me tag into that verse. I want to see this part of the picture, because at the very end of this chapter, Jesus says, "If you had believed Moses,
yes,
you would believe me, for he wrote about me."
That's right.
"But if you do not believe what he wrote, how will you believe what I say?" Yeah. So Jesus is not dumping Moses.
No. There's a tension there, though.
Yeah.
And the tension is not between Jesus and Moses. It's in the minds of those who are in authority. And
now let me heighten that tension between Jesus and Moses, though, because there is
okay.
a tension.
Yeah,
it's analogous in some ways to Matthew 5, where Jesus says, "You have heard, but I say," because here you go back to Numbers. In Numbers 15, 32 to 36, there's an incident where a man was picking up sticks on the Sabbath. And the text is quite clear. Moses said, "What will we do with this man?" And the Lord commands him to be stoned.
Wow.
Now, that's typical Old Testament stuff. Any serious offense is handled that way. So let's not be too squeamish about that. But still, the fact that picking up sticks on the Sabbath was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, Jesus actually commands the man to pick up his bed and carry it on Sabbath.
Yeah, that's fair.
So in one case, you get stoned. When God tells, at God's command, now God, and we believe that Jesus was God incarnate, God of the Old Testament, and certainly the Old Testament was Jesus' Bible. Now he commands him to carry his bed, pick up the burden, and carry it on Sabbath.
Yeah.
Help me put those two together.
Just do what God says.
Oh, just do what God says.
Do what God says, and you'll be all right.
I think, Alden, I'm going to hand that one back to you.
Well, I do believe it ties in with what Jesus said. The Sabbath was made for man.
That's right. Yeah.
And not man for the Sabbath. And if you look at Jewish history, I think this explains a lot of why the New Testament struggles with law. Israel finally realized we went into captivity because we didn't keep the law. And so you get in this classic, we're going to make a fence about the law, and we're really going to keep it, and we're going to keep it good.
Mm-hmm.
So you, for instance, can go to the Jewish writings, and they have 39 major categories of breaking the Sabbath.
Yeah,
when Jesus and his disciples walked through the grain fields,
that
was four major laws that they had broken.
They were threshing, they were
winnowing, preparing food, and all of that stuff. See, so it seems to me that they had been so intent on keeping the law that Jesus said, "We need to rediscover the purpose of the law, and we're here to do good."
Is it safe? Well, it's probably not safe, but is it all right to look at this from the perspective of a parent in dealing with children? Not only do you deal with each child differently, but at various times in the child's life, you may tell them to do exactly the opposite, when really your intent remains the same.
Well, if you look back at ancient Israel, for example, they had apparently come for hundreds of years without a Sabbath. And they could not believe God's straightforward command in the manna, for example. Mm-hmm. God says, you'll pick up a double portion on Friday, there'll be none on Saturday, none on Sabbath. See? And surprise, they went out to pick up food on Sabbath. Yeah. So these are people who needed to see clearly that when God gives commands and boundaries, yeah. He really means them.
Yeah. I think what Paul is pointing out is very helpful for me, too. We have to remember that the law of God was given to Moses to reveal his character, but it was also to govern a particular mm-hmm. nation at a particular time.
Yes.
And that makes it very hard to negotiate a lot of these sort of things. If we look at Deuteronomy, in which we find some of the sharpest, some of the hardest things done for people who breach their covenant with God. The Sabbath commandment is tied to salvation out of Egypt. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think Jesus is bringing that out, that Sabbath is a sign of salvation, a sign of God's grace, a sign of God's deliverance, mm-hmm. which many of these people had lost sight.
Sabbath is a day for healing,
yeah. Yes.
Restoration.
Right. In fact, as one author has called it, the Sabbath was the first worker protection law.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, of course, with Jesus coming back now, we need to recover that sense. There are a couple of other things which I'd love to touch on here. There's just a whole host of things. Jesus healed this man without any faith requirement whatsoever.
Yeah.
He didn't ask for it. He didn't have to give any demonstration. He was declared healed mm-hmm. without any faith. What's this? You know, I thought we had to have faith, belief.
To be healed.
To be healed, yeah. Faith to be healed, yeah.
Takes us back, I think. I like Matthew where it says, be ye perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect. And what is God's kind of perfection? He's gracious to both the just and the unjust.
Uh-huh.
And for that kind of graciousness, the sun to shine and the rain yeah. to fall and all the benefits of life.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah. And maybe that's why Luke in his version says, blessed are the merciful.
That's right, because God is merciful.
And the same parallel where Matthew says perfect,
yeah.
he says...
If we could immediately see that if you believed in God or followed Jesus, then you would be healed, you would never get sick, everything in life would be great,
mm-hmm.
immediately then our motives and motivations for following Jesus would yeah. quickly become skewed.
Yeah. Yes, very.
And that's why you have this rather sobering conclusion is that when you really believe in God, life is probably going to get worse instead of better.
Yeah.
Now, Jesus told this man also, and we'll have just a few moments to tuck this one in, don't sin anymore.
Mm-hmm. Don't continue to sin.
Don't continue to sin. What in the world had this guy been doing?
Apparently, being an invalid or you know having difficulty moving around does not mean that you are unable to sin. Sin mm-hmm. is not just outward action. But it's an inward attitude, perhaps, as well.
Yeah, state of mind.
State of mind.
Mm-hmm.
Stewing and brewing
what
over
you
the
do
wrong
with
things.
The mind. Yeah,
yeah. yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The next question, and unfortunately we can't deal with this, if you got your mind crooked, how in the world do you straighten it out?
You set it on Christ.
You set it on Jesus. We'll talk more about that. Next week, we're going to be talking about the feeding of the 5,000. Again, a marvelous story. Thank you, Paul and Bruce, for being with us. My thanks also to Jim Bryson, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in. Our title, let me just remind you for next time, is, in fact, The Sacred in the Common. And that's what we'll be exploring next time. For Pro, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Pro, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you may call 509-527-2194 or email probe@wwc.edu. Join us again next week at the same time for Probe.